and welcome to The Drone Frontier, a podcast series commissioned by UKAID and undertaken by the Frontier Technologies Hub. I am your host, Sarah Pennell, Policy Advisor in FCDO's Technology and Innovation Unit and Drones for Development Lead at the FCDO. In this five-part series, we're going to delve deeper into what the future of drones or unmanned aerial vehicles can look like, how they can be used for positive impact, what we need to do to include them in existing systems, and how we can get the global rules on drone technology right. During the series, we'll hear from some of those pilots, as well as some of the most cutting-edge uses and users of drone technology around the world. We hope this podcast will better inform you about what's out there, as well as what's needed to successfully harness this growing technology. In this episode, we are looking at the future of drones for good. Which drone use cases are showing the most potential in the sector, as well as how infrastructure and local ownership should continue to form key considerations when it comes to building projects in the future. To help us talk through these issues is Jonty Slater, Managing Director of the Blue Globe, who has worked with international development innovation programs for the last 8 years and with drones for the last 4 years. Jonty was part of the African Drone Forum 2020 in Rwanda, running the Lake Kivu Challenge, and currently part of the team running the first ever African Drone Soccer Challenge in Nigeria. Welcome, Jonty. Good to see you.
Hi, Sarah. Good to join you.
Great. So you've worked on many projects that include UAVs. Where are we today in terms of how drones are used for global good?
I think the part of drones for good is that it has to be supporting the existing infrastructure. Trying to create new business cases for drones has allowed us to test different aspects, but it hasn't allowed us to achieve scale. Scale is the key for drones. And vaccine delivery and medicine delivery has been the best user case that we've seen of drones for good in middle and low income countries. And a lot of that learning is being brought back to high income countries as well. But in all of those cases, we've been testing it on the high end, the high impact side of drones for good. But I think it can be scaled in a lot of other areas.
Thanks, Jonty. That's fascinating. So you mentioned that some of the common use cases are vaccines and medical uses. It'd be great to hear where some of those pilots are happening and where you've seen those being used. And also you mentioned there was some other uses for development. It would be great to hear some of the other use cases that are getting traction as well.
The best known user case we have is Zipline. Zipline started in Rwanda, is now in Ghana, is now spreading across a number of different areas around the world with medicine delivery. And they have a very specific user case in terms of how the drone is used in terms of base stations and aerial drops of their medicines. But there are a number of other players in the market in DRC with Village Reach, and we're seeing it now expand into projects across South America where these drones are being used for and continuing the medical delivery or medicine delivery, or being able to do pickups of blood samples or something like that and bringing them back to mainstay base stations. But these are high value, they're valued very highly in terms of how much people are willing to pay for that delivery of that service. There's a cost-benefit analysis that's occurred within those models. What we are seeing more businesses is looking at is, can drones be used as part of a transportation network? Can you integrate it into other parts of the infrastructure that a country has or that is used, so that it can be linked in to offset the use of motorcycles for delivery of spare parts? the clear part to be seen within all of these is how well it requires an infrastructure base. These all are requiring infrastructure bases. We know that Zipline and a number of other players have these very large base stations that cost tens, hundreds, thousands of dollars to deliver, to create. Are those actually the way that actually you can achieve scale? Those are high infrastructure, high things. And one of the key aspects we're seeing when speaking to people about scale is, can we find other ways of achieving scale that actually brings communities back into it? Can it actually support infrastructure locally instead of it being just a large infrastructure project that only delivers one particular item?
Okay, Jonty, so you mentioned the infrastructure that's needed for a drone hub. Can you tell us a bit more about what that would look like and what it needs? And maybe also tell us a bit about some of the different types of drones that can meet these different use cases that we've discussed.
Infrastructure is really interesting, Sarah, in terms of some amazing architects have envisaged these very beautiful structures that people would have that would be these drone ports, thought of like as an airport, but for drones. But it doesn't need to be that. It could just be a container that has a generator and an internet connection and has a fence around a 30 or 50 meter landing space to allow the drone to safely land and to stay away and to keep people away from that space. That's as simple as it could be. It could be even more simple. It could be a truck that comes up to a place and has some of that infrastructure built into a truck, and it's a mobile drone port. But if multiple people are going to be able to use it, where you want to have multiple operators being able to run from that space, and it to be part of the transportation infrastructure of an area, a flat space with a container, with power, with an internet, is the minimal that you would need. Does that make sense, Sarah?
Yeah, it does. I see. So we've ended up in a situation where we've got some small pilots or drone suppliers arriving in country, and they are delivering just one type of good in one sector, so health and medical supplies. And that's really costly because they are only running one bit of a network. And what you're saying is there are chances to integrate that more so you can get, I guess, better uses and more economies of scale from those operations. And what have some of the challenges been? And why has that not happened yet?
So what I would say, Sarah, is for scale to happen, we need regulations, but then we also need infrastructure. Where are these drones going to be supported? Where are these drones going to be maintained and launched from? It's one of the key aspects that we're seeing around the world is that people are thinking about, what does a drone port look like? Can you imagine what a drone port could look like? Can there be community support built into that? Because you're going to need power, you're going to need large-scale, medium-scale infrastructure, you're going to require to have internet. Well, can you then share that with the wider community in a safe way that works within the regulations? Because you don't want the drones flying over people's houses or over a community centre that's gaining benefit from those aspects. So I think all of this needs to be really thought about is, who else can benefit from the drones? Can it just be those single large-scale players, or can it be that the small-scale players are only allowed to do imagery? We're seeing some amazing small players in the market across Tanzania, Uganda, that are just doing imagery. They're doing urban imagery with lightweight drones that are being seen to be able just to do urban imagery or peri-urban imagery. But actually, they're not then transporting. They're not transporting in any way any infrastructure. All they're doing is taking photos.
So what are some of the challenges that these locally run smaller operations are having? What's preventing them from being able to develop drone services? Why do we always see the big international players coming in?
So I think the big players can come in with budget. They can also come in with safety test certification. These small players, especially the drone industry, has got into a number of parts where there are manufacturers of drones that are also providing services, like Wingcopter and Swoop Aero. They are manufacturing their own drone. They know it, their safety, Falanzi. They are providing their drone and they're providing it as a service. There are other players in the market like DJI that just manufacture the drone and then sell that drone for other people to use it. When those drones are that being manufactured and being managed by those organizations, they are going down the very expensive route of trying to certify those drones. They then know the whole model, they can run that whole set of infrastructure, and then they are looking at now partnering with other organizations, but they are owned the end-to-end from start to finish of the cert for the drone. There is the other aspect of this whole thing is, how did the small players, how do startups then get into the thing? Do they need to build their own drone, or can they buy a drone from somebody? Is that then licensed to be able to fly? And getting commercial licensing of a drone is a very expensive, hundreds of thousands, some people are talking millions to get some of these drones certified to be able to take weight, to take large scale mass in terms of being able to transport something, to actually be able to fly over an urban area. We're not seeing it. We look outside today, Western Europe should have drones flying across its skies. We should have drone delivery. We don't, because everybody has got concerned about it. People are testing that same level of equipment in the global south, in the middle and low income countries, in Africa. Africa's become the test bed for the world in terms of proving a lot of these models. We're not being able to test it in Europe because of regulatory aspects. Everybody's worried about being safe.
Thanks, Shanti. That's a really interesting point. And something I wanted to ask about as well was whether we are seeing similar drone operations in the West, and is this a case of applying those models and that technology to the global south? It sounds like we're not. And we are probably, yeah, as you say, learning and experimenting a lot in the in developing country use cases.
That there are now pilots. COVID has drawn in a load of new aspects in terms of the drone industry across the global north, in terms of has driven a lot of people to be able to do it. There's the Royal Mail in the UK is now doing drone deliveries for certain high value impact, is being used mainly to deliver to islands where it's across water. So that's where the user case and the safety regulations are going. It's across water, it's safe to do it. We are seeing, though, in China, we're seeing it in India, where drones are now being used to make large-scale delivery networks to deliver fast food and aspects like that. But the cost value of each of those drone flights hasn't been proven as a business model in terms of the cost of delivery is still having to be subsidized in some way to make that work. But we haven't achieved scale in terms of how much it costs to do each drone flight and how much that is worth to the end customer. And are we willing to pay for that in terms of if it's going to cost $10 for that drone flight to deliver your Amazon package because you want it in 1 hour, are you willing to pay that extra amount, or is all of the organizations willing to absorb that cost?
Is it a win-win situation in developing countries where there's a really clear use case for drones because it means they can circumvent some other infrastructure challenges like poor roads and so on to get deliveries, and it enables some of these companies to develop their technology, to work on, you know, what the regulatory environment might look like, that can then those lessons can be shared around the world?
I think sharing the lessons around the world is the key aspect. Yes, there are, actually everything you've said is correct in terms of it. There's a question though, is should we be using Africa to be our test bed? Should we also look at having test corridors in Spain or in the UK, and should we be doing that? There is the benefit that Rwanda and Ghana and DRC, these countries with challenging infrastructure. Rwanda, I would say, has one of the best infrastructures, but it is the country of 1,000 mountains. it takes a long time to get it there. A drone can do it. We're seeing the same in India. We're seeing the same in Nepal, where these are being able to be used for delivery. But can we take it outside of these user cases of medical delivery? Can it be used to maintain roads and infrastructure? Can you look at it in terms of saying, okay, let's monitor all of the roads in the country and have a drone continuously flying over and seeing where we can proactively maintain these? Or where countries have landslips, can we actively see where those landslips could be? Can we look for precursors? Can we see where ground movement could be possibly occurring? And can we go and say, oh gosh, we know something's about to happen? Can we think about those additional user cases that are also hugely valuable? Is it urban planning that is a really good user case in terms of saying, can we map the whole of our city? Can we know what's happening around it? If I take it to a example back in the UK, a lot of councils don't actually know when there's a legal building happening. They require your neighbours to tell you on that. How comfortable are we as a society to have drones continuously flying over the top of us to continuously monitor to see if there is illegal buildings happening? Countries in Africa, though, are considering this. Countries across the world are considering this, of actually using drones, lightweight, very simple drones that can be done across the world and can be flown and then can give mapping and do it on a regular basis to be able to understand where these drones are being used. This comes down to a bit of regulation as well, in terms of there's two different types of drone flight. There's a line of sight drone flight, or there's beyond visual line of sight. Most drones, to achieve what we're talking about with all of these projects we're doing, are beyond visual line of sight, which requires you to have a much more capable drone, a much more capable pilot. Those aspects also need to be thought about in terms of how we achieve scale. A lot of African countries and across the world are still basing all of their pilot training on either Europe, the UK, or the US. They haven't had the chance of setting up their own chance of certifying their own pilots. A number of countries and the Flying Labs program across the world is helping to look at supporting that to allow countries to set up their own certification. Are we then happy to say we accept it's the same as a driving license? Are we accepting the driving license from the US to be equal to the driving license from the UK and having that cross certification? How are we expecting all of that to occur? Do we need drone pilots? Is another question that some other organizations are doing. Zipline doesn't require a drone pilot. It's a fully automated autonomous drone. Is that what we want to be having? Do we think machine managed is better than having a human pilot being in control of the drone? A lot of the visual imagery has a pilot at the beginning and at the end, but actually it's an autonomous drone in between. A lot of these are still questions, and they come back to the regulatory side as well, Sarah. Regulatory aspects of this is currently the biggest constraint for scale being achieved across many projects, and how that can be managed is only going to be able to be achieved when we actually have some harmonization of regulations across the world. If you were going to have multiple operators, also, how are you going to coordinate between them? Are you going to need some kind of drone traffic control? Are you going to be able to track all of these drones? And that is part of the regulation aspect as well, is that how can you know where all the drones are that are in your skies? There are some amazing technologies that are being managed in Volley, are building these trackers. A number of satellite organizations are looking at building trackers that can be sat on the drone so that you can know where your drone is at any time, and so that the regulatory side or everybody else in the airspace knows where the drones are. These are really interesting technologies that allow you to then manage that drone infrastructure support. And infrastructure could be countrywide, where you'll need this kind of airspace monitoring, or you'll need these places where the drones can be launched and land. One of the interesting aspects is, does the drone, it's where the drone needs to be serviced as well. Drones, as with any kind of transportation infrastructure, will need to be maintained. They will need their blades being done. They will need a source of fuel. Are you going down an electric route where you'll need to be able to charge up your battery. So, Sarah, you asked the question about the types of drones. So there is fossil fuel powered drones that are gasoline powered drones or petrol powered drones. And then we have battery powered drones. And the battery powered drones are very high capacity now. And then there's one other very new type, which is hydrogen powered drones. Doosan in Korea have been doing a lot of tests with hydrogen powered drones. Really amazing, kind of can provide long term, but then require generators to create the hydrogen to be able to power it. So you need these fuel sources. How are you going to maintain that? Is the infrastructure locally able to provide that power if you need electricity to do that? Can it be safely delivered? Do you need to look after the sensitive electronics that are in a lot of these drones? And then we have the subset within that. We've talked about the power supply for the drones. We then have the drones which are imagery-based drones, which can be very light and made out of polystyrene that can be just used, can have very long flights and can be just are pure imagery-based drones and that wouldn't hurt you if they came anywhere near you or bumped into you or something like that. We also then have the drones that are transportation drones that are delivering medical equipment. But actually, some drones can deliver their drones of being able to deliver 50, 100 kilos. There are plans for 200, being able to deliver 200 kilo loads around the world. These are much more. They're almost mini aeroplanes or mini helicopters. They've just taken the pilot space out and filled it with electronics and batteries. And they're a drone at that point in terms of it. They're a UAV or UAS at that point in terms of how we talk about it.
Thanks, Jonty. That's fascinating. And what's really clear is what we lump together as drones and UAVs actually is a huge wide variety of different transportation devices that serve so many different purposes and, you know, as you say, fall under completely different regulations. So we're sort of trying to group together anything from a camera to a truck to a motorbike. And so I can see why, you know, this is such a complicated space that we're trying to work in. So just coming back on some of the how the drones are managed in the air and how it would be managed from a drone port. And I love the idea of a drone port, I guess a bit like a bus station or something, but with lots of different suppliers coming and going. Are these normally run from, well, governed from the Civil Aviation Authority? So is it the normal air traffic control that will be trying to track all of the drones in the air? And something that I just realized yesterday when we were talking about a pilot that I'm working on in Nepal was it's not just the big planes and the normal flight routes, but there they were grappling with emergency ambulance helicopters and paragliders and all the other things that are in the air. And how on earth do you try and see everything? And I can imagine it's much simpler with big aircraft, which are just one type of plane, they follow routes, and then all the other things that are flying around. And yeah, how are they managing that?
So to be honest, they aren't. Nobody's come up with a simple way. There are ways that they can be used on a GPS, GSM trackers. So these are very low-cost trackers that every drone would have, depending on the regulatory side of it, that could be put on, that are self-powered, and you attach it to your drone, and you make sure that your drone, like a transponder that you would have in an aircraft, they ping, and everybody knows where their drone is every 30 seconds. But that could be a cost barrier to some participants in the space, because it may be that they cost £20, £10 to do, but actually you usually have a service that you need to buy or an infrastructure to be able to read that. And how you manage that infrastructure in terms of that overall space and space management, yes, the civil aviation authorities have that, should be managing that space, but usually they're trying to manage the large-scale planes and helicopters in the space, and then having thousands of these little drones then filling their screens, is that the correct way to do that? And a lot of regulatory side have set height limits, so saying drones can only work in certain heights. But when, as we said, we're talking about the different types of drones that are around, some of these drones are almost aircraft in their own right, or should be treated as an aircraft, so they should be flying in that airspace. It's more efficient to fly at certain higher altitudes if you're going long distances than flying at lower altitudes. And then it's even more complicated in countries like Nepal that are actually at higher elevations. Their drones actually can't achieve huge height elevations because actually there's not enough air to be able to support the drones to be able to fly. And they need to think about that. There's also the other complication in Nepal is people are flying kites as well. And how do you deal with that with you're flying your drones at certain festival seasons? And so there's other aspects that you need to think of culturally as well. Is this the best place to fly your drone because it's Chinese New Year and people are releasing Chinese lanterns? How that will impact on your drone flight, or if you're flying kites, or there are sports being conducted in that thing, or fireworks, or other aspects of like that. Those all impact on your drones and how you use your drones and where you need to be culturally using your drones. Things to just think about in terms of where that you think about the drone. And this comes on to an aspect of where donors should be supporting the use of drones, because is it appropriate? Are people happy? Are communities happy for drones to be flying over their airspaces? A lot of the time when donors have driven this whole space, in if we think about it, from all points of view, drones for good have been driven by donors. Like FCDO have been one of the very, very, and previously referred to as DFID, previously that they have driven this space in terms of the last few years. UNICEF, the World Bank, they have all been able to drive this space and allow all the participants to be able to look at their business models, how well they work. There's the other side of drones, which is the militarization of drones. And I think it's something that we haven't spoken about within this, is that a lot of the drone infrastructure has come out of military use of drones and then has been brought into the civilian space. And how we feel about that in terms of what other then can drones be used for in the future, taking them away from that aspect of, it has that darker aspect in terms of how the military uses drones, and a lot of the technology, where that has come from. And so I think we do need to recognize that we have benefited from all of that knowledge and space within where drones have come, how they've evolved over the last 20, 30 years. But now that they are in the civilian space, can we use them for better? Can they be used to track animals? Can they be used to be able to deliver parts on time, urgent parts on time? Can they be used to allow people to be able to access new technology or provide services that people wouldn't have got because they're usually too far away from urban areas? Can they benefit from those elements of those services? Not just thinking about it from the medical point of view, but also what else do we treat, or what else could people see as high value services that could be delivered to them?
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you would like to find out more about the work of our guests and any of the resources they've mentioned, please check out the links in the description. Also, you can leave us a rating and a review. It really helps others find our show. This series is based on an internal report completed by the Frontier Technologies Hub for the FCDO, which reviews the 7 pilot projects that have tested drones as part of the Frontier Technologies live streaming program. Check out the link in the description to read the full report. This podcast has been funded by the FCDO, and I would like to thank all of our guests, as well as our collaborators at the Frontier Technologies Hub, for helping to produce this podcast. You've been listening to The Drone Frontier. Thank you.